on Talk Radio 98.5 WRTA. It's the 11th hour. 814-946-0435 with Doug Herendeen and the theme, because we have from HGTV from some years ago as the collector inspector, the guy who used to host the national show What You Got, Harry Rinker.
Hey, what you got today?
Well, I got a bunch of questions about stuff that we were already starting to talk about some of it. During the news there.
Yeah, pre-show, yep. Well,
but if you have any questions about antiques, collectibles, or anything like that, 814-946-0435.
You know, or just want to know what's happening in the antiques and collectibles world and stuff. I've been up to Renninger's in Mount Dora here now a couple of times, and the malls are wide open in Florida. In fact, this will be the last show from Florida. We're heading back to Michigan. Linda and I come May the 7th. She's a little reluctant about going back up there, but I got to get back home to my Michigan house and revisit all my stuff again.
Yeah. Have you both been vaccinated completely yet?
Oh, yeah. I've been vaccinated 24 times.
24 times?
Yes. Well, down here in Florida, in Seminole County, where I am, you needed to get a ticket. And I learned how to navigate the system to get a ticket. And then the neighbor said, "Can you get tickets?" And I said, "Sure."
Yeah.
And they said, "Get me some tickets." And before I know it, I got 24 people tickets. And I've been somebody's brother-in-law or brother-in-law or relative for the last 2.5 months.
Yeah.
But now everything's wide open down here. You can go almost anywhere and get a shot. In fact, I was up at the Publix, which is a grocery store down here, and they had a young lady there signing people up for shots, and she had no business. Nobody was in line.
Interesting.
All they had to do was walk back to the pharmacy and get a shot.
I don't know what the numbers are, but I'm guessing more people in Florida, percentage of population, have had vaccination than
in
Pennsylvania.
Actually, you know, they keep publishing these stories about the red states and the blue states, and that the red states have a higher, and Florida has done really well. I mean, I can't even begin to tell you, but we're not in the top 10 of the percentage-wise. We've got a couple of rural counties down here, as I'm sure Pennsylvania does, where there's a lot of resistance to the vaccine.
All I know is in New York, there's a guy that I talked to online about something totally unrelated to this, but he had to fill out multiple pages online. Now, this guy is computer savvy. He's over 65. He knows electronics. He knows computers. And describing this, he was mentioning this to some of us online. And I'm thinking, how is the average person who's over 65, who's never used a computer, going to have any idea of how they're going to? And then they kept canceling the appointments on him. Oh, yeah, we made the appointment, but there's no vaccine. So I'm sorry, they didn't get it to us. So you have to reschedule. We can't just reschedule you automatically. You just go back into that system.
Well. And you know what? This is one of the things about the great inconsistency in this country. And that one, here in Seminole County, and I will tell you, every county down here had a different set of rules. But in Seminole County, they had a ticket organization, like it's called Eventbrite or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And all you had to do was get a ticket. All you know, your ticket was your entrance into the thing, and the tickets were released Tuesday mornings at 10 and for the week, and usually in 10 to 15 minutes, all the appointments were gone. Now, this was before the current arrival of vaccine. In fact, because I've been vaccinated so many times, I've been getting emails almost daily from the local county here saying, "Hey, we got more vaccine, we got more sites opening up, blah, 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 blah." But, you know, just the whole thing of navigating the system and getting a ticket was confusing to so many people down here.
Yeah.
And then what really got me, Jordan, I think I mentioned to you before that I was at the German-American Association's Spring Fest this weekend, which had hundreds of people sitting around at tables with nobody on a mask. But in the months leading up to that, a lot of the members are GIs that married German gals or German guys that married American gals that came over here. Anyway, our government, in its infinite wisdom, offered the vaccine to GIs at the local veterans hospitals, right?
Yeah.
They couldn't take their wives in. They wouldn't vaccinate their wives. I can't believe it that we would do that. So I wound up getting tickets for about a half a dozen or more wives of these officers and enlisted men. And, you know, it just the inconsistencies were huge. There's a place north of us called the Villages. And that was a case where they opened up vaccine centers and ran out of vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden, a couple of my friends in the Villages said, "Can you get us tickets, Harry?" I said, "Sure." They drove an hour down here to get the shots.
Good night.
But you know, I got Pfizer. I'm thrilled. I'll tell you, mentally, it makes a huge difference. I assume you've had your shots, right?
No, because I was supposed to get the Johnson & Johnson. See, they opened it up. Believe it or not, I'm considered essential because I'm on the radio, right? I would think that people who are healthcare workers are not. Well, they were taken care of first. Then they opened it up to us about 2 weeks ago so you can make an appointment. I was not about to make an appointment. I was not over 65, still not. I don't have a health condition. I'll wait my turn. So as soon as it was legal, make the appointment. They say, by the way, it'll be the J&J, right? We'll see you. And that was going to be last Wednesday. Well, last Tuesday, they say, nope, can't do that. So they canceled all the appointments. I made another one. I'm getting the Moderna this afternoon. So if I turn into a werewolf or something, I'll let you know. But I don't think that's going to be happening.
Well, the thing is, I will tell you this, and I'm sure if you talk to people that have been vaccinated and gotten the two of them, and I consider myself fortunate I got the Pfizer, and you'll consider yourself fortunate you got the Moderna before it's all said and done. You know, it's a complete change in your mental attitude. My wife still wears a mask out in public and everything else, even though she's at 95% immunity too. And as I said, I was at this festival all weekend and such. There, I'm trying to think whether or not we should be collecting COVID-19 masks.
Well, that's something I asked you about on a previous show, and there's got to be eventually there will be collectibles involving this entire time, whether it's a DoorDash sticker or whether it's like a sticker that says I got my vaccination, or it'll be somebody's mask, which may or may not be hygienic, but who knows?
But the difficulty is, it's kind of like T-shirts and coffee cups. There is no end to the number of T-shirts and the number of coffee cups that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're talking millions.
Or almost gimme hats as well.
Yeah. Yes, that's right. Trucker hats and gimme hats and that type of thing. There have been attempts in the past to create some kind of logic for collecting them. I have a huge collection of T-shirts from barbecue joints. But you know, to what end? I mean, there's nobody going to collect them. And this is what concerns me about the face mask. There's so many variations. And how are you going to know which ones are scarce, which ones are rare, which ones are, you know, highly desirable?
Or, you know, there's going to be a whole bunch of people who it's like, I can imagine mask burning parties.
Whether it's
advised or not, because some people say, oh, you watch, we'll be wearing a mask for the next 5 years. Well, maybe you will, but most of the people in this burg, I tell you right now, it ain't going to happen.
What we need are ugly masks. My wife bought one of these, what is it, something 95 masks or whatever she got.
Yeah, 95, yeah.
She has this black parrot beak on all the time, and it just drives me nuts.
Jimmy Buffett fan.
Well, you know, it's all right. Collecting itself is changing so much these days as to what is collected, what's not collected, and the high end of the market has gone nuts. I mean, I just read today that they sold, now, Action Comics number one,
Superman,
has reached $3 million, okay?
When does the tulip bulb moment come?
Well, it has to come. And you know, I firmly believe this. I believe there is a price for every antique or collectible where, you know, it reaches a point where that's it. That's as far as it's going to go. And I kept thinking it was going to be that at $750,000 for that comic, and now it's up to $3 million. But, you know, the problem is that, you know, Bernie Madoff's skill set has rolled off into a lot of auctioneers who convince people with endless amounts of money to invest in this stuff because it's a good investment. So returning to my story, yesterday, Action number 27, that's the Batman one, right?
Okay.
Broke $1 million for the first time. A grade 8, even not even one of the top graded comics. I mean, 8's a good grade, but 10's the best. broke $1 million. First time that comic's broken $1 million. A guy bought it 18 years ago for $80,000.
See, that's what I should be buying. The heck with buying mutual funds, the heck with buying a house, the heck with buying stocks and bonds. Buy a comic book.
Yeah, which is encased in plastic, never to come out of its sealed envelope. You're never going to be able to read it except online.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and somebody's going to try to tell me that's worth $1 million. You know, in 100 years from now, or maybe 200 years from now, people are going to write books about the dumb people that paid this kind of money for this stuff.
Well, hold that thought. We have to take a break. And we'll pick it up from that, because I think there's some extensions we can go on this. But I'll tell you what, if anybody has any questions, if you have a question for Harry about any antiques or collectibles, whatever they may be, 814-946-0435. Yeah, we get to dial the 814 now because we've got the overlay and all that. We'll continue on Talk Radio 98.5 WRTA.
Don't keep your opinions to yourself. That's why we're here. Call 9.
Need money? Dean Patterson needs your car. Patterson Automotive is looking for cars up to 6 years old with no more than 60,000 to 65,000 miles. Take it to Dean Patterson to sell or trade. While you're there, check out the quality vehicles. Chevy, Mazda, Hyundai, Cadillac. Great vehicles, great deals. At Dean Patterson, price is the easiest part of their job. From service to sales, you're our Patterson priority. If your car is up to 6 years old with mileage of no more than 60 to 65,000, take it to Dean Patterson to sell or trade. Patterson Automotive, 101 Pleasant Valley Boulevard, Altoona.
Honey, I'm going fishing.
Okay, dear.
Maybe not. Well, might as well enjoy a fine cigar and listen to the rain. Honey, I'm going to mow the yard.
Okay, dear.
Okay, well. Honey, I'm going to do a little golfing.
Okay, dear. Don't forget your cigars.
Oh.
You're kidding me. This rain is crazy. Give me one of those. Hey, what do you say? Instead of sitting here on this damp and dirty porch, we go to J.M. Boswell's and check out their indoor smoke lounge.
J.M. Boswell's, located on Route 22 in Alexandria, invites all of their friends to visit their rustic smoking lounge. Browse through their walk-in humidor and find yourself a perfect cigar. Or purchase a handsome handmade pipe made by J.M. himself. J.M. Boswell's, Route 22, Alexandria.
Open Tuesday through Friday, 9 to 5, Saturday, 9 to 4, close Sunday and Monday.
This week's Appalachian Running Company Sports Star of the Week is first grader John Wasco. John's a second-year wrestler, recently placing second at the Pennsylvania Future Stars Tournament for all of Western PA. Great job, John. You're definitely a future star. If you'd like to nominate a youth sports star of the week, go to LeitnerCommunications.com and click on the banner, or call 814-943-6112 weekdays 9 to 5. It's the Appalachian Running Company Youth Sports Star of the Week, with special thanks to Shields Trophy, Union Avenue, Altoona.
Central PA's Beacon of Truth. Talk Radio 98.5 and 1240 WRTA.
Talk Radio 98.5 WRTA, the 11th hour. Doug Herendeen and antiques and collectibles expert Harry Rinker. And we were talking about, Harry, you just said that you think that 100 years from now, or maybe 200 years from now, books will be written about how big an idiot a lot of us were to pay ridiculous amounts of money for things that they can't understand, like a comic book.
Well, I think you're right to ask a question about the speculative end. I mean, come on. The high end of the market has nothing to do with collecting. It has everything to do with investing and creating this myth that these things have an inherent value that just keeps rising over time. Now, you know, the problem is I was around when a collection of comic books came out in the 70s, and it had 10 of the top 25 comics in it, including Action Number 1 and Action 27, DC 27. And, you know, the collection itself sold for $75,000, and the guy turned around and sold the Batman comic, or the Superman comic, for $75,000, and then sold off the rest and made a profit. So, you know, it's hard to argue that this hasn't happened. Yes, it has, but for everything that has happened, it's there. But back in the late 1980s, There was a spectacular run in the market. And the question became raised in the antiques collectibles trade. Who's the winner? Is the winner the guy that pays the top value for the object and has the object, or are the winners all the people that made money along the way getting it up to that point where he can never sell it for what he paid for it? And I think there's going to be, I mean, I could cite my Hopalong Cassidy bedroom suite. I paid $5,000 for that. When it went to auction, it brought $350. I mean, not everything goes up. It's all right. I had the pleasure of owning it all those years, and some of the things I bought for $350 sold for thousands. So, you know, it all comes out in the wash. But I think the market will eventually collapse. And I know people, you know, hate to have me say these kind of things, and they think, oh, well, he what does he know about it? I mean, we can cite this. You can always cite examples that have gone through. But look at the stamp industry. I mean, you know, back when you'd buy a pane of 10-cent stamps, it was $10 a pane. And people said, and that's what the price was during all the stamps centering around landing on the moon and that type of stuff, between 8 and 13 cents a stamp, and they were sold in panes of 100.
Yeah.
Today, you could buy them for 70-80% of face value because nobody wants them.
Well, it's interesting because I mentioned to Harry during the break, you know, I've got some like Apollo 11 stamps or something, but these were commemorative stamps that came out in a block, and they've got the special border on them, and I've still got them in the little wax paper that they give you at the post office. And I'm thinking, well, you know, I'm never going to put these on a letter. Why in the world don't I just put them on eBay or something? But except everybody's already had that thought, so they're probably barely face value.
Well, yeah, that's right, because what happens is there's another question you have to ask. What is the value of something when everybody who has one wants one? Okay, now when you get to the value of stamps, because of the Postal Service laws, every stamp that's unused, its face value is still and always will be its face value. So if you have a plate block of 4 10-cent stamps, you got 40 cents worth of stamps. Now, you can't put them on an envelope and mail a letter because of the fact that you send postage is above 40 cents these days.
Yeah.
On the other hand, while I was on the Citizen Stamp Advisory Committee, and you know I'm still on that, you know, we switched from denominational stamps, first-class denominational stamps, to forever stamps, which means if you buy a forever stamp today at 55 cents and the postage goes up to 65 cents, your stamp is still good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's whatever, it becomes whatever the postage is at that time. And so,
it was one of the smartest moves they ever made. How they came up with that, I have no idea, but I'm glad they did.
Well, I think it was a smart move because it sold a lot more stamps, and the stamp division is doing very well. By the way, speaking of stamps,
yes.
May the 4th
be with you.
May the 4th be with you, yes. The United States Postal Service will be issuing on May the 4th, first day of issue, a new Star Wars droid pane. There are 10 droids. They're all good guy droids. We couldn't do bad guy droids, but they're all good guy droids. And I think that's going to hit the local post offices, and it's going to go nuts. Now, here's the deal. They are pre-selling them on USPS.gov/stamps. And Harry, who is knowledgeable about stamp shortages once they come out, if something is successful, has already gone up and ordered his sheets of them to make sure that I get some of them. And they still have a few sheets left of the Bugs Bunny stamps, which were there. But bigger news yet, for me anyway, is that, you know, stamps used to have first day of issue ceremonies. You know, they'd pick a town or a place and there'd be a big ceremony. I mean, I went to New York to the Comic-Con convention there where they released a Batman stamp many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always a big celebration and so forth. And then, of course, I attended the last first day of issue that was live, which was the Arnold Palmer stamp here in Florida last March before COVID shut everything down. And so over the passing, they've done first day of issues virtually. Okay, now here's the odd thing about this. You can get a crowd of anywhere from 50 to a couple hundred people at a first day of issue ceremony live, okay?
Yeah.
By gosh, by doing the virtual, didn't they find out they got thousands of viewers that watched the ceremony, you know, watched it virtually, and they recorded it, and it turned out to be really great. So there was some thought that the Postal Service would stick with the virtual first day of issues and abandon the other. Now, the thing about it was that if you went to a first day of issue, there were special pamphlets that were issued for that event, and there were special pins issued for during the stamp and so forth. And so, you know, they were highly collectible. And so for a whole year, that whole level of stamp collecting went away. Well, the good news is we're back. We're going to go back to live. Well, it means not everyone, not this year, unfortunately, not for Star Wars, even though it's going to be released out in California, I think somewhere near Lucas Ranch. I mean, I've gotten on a plane and gone. But they're doing one, I think they're doing one today or tomorrow at Mount Vernon for heritage breed animals. I don't know why they picked that one, but, well, I do know why. So they're doing that one. But on June the 24th, in Little Falls, New Jersey, there is a live first day of issue that I am flying in for. It is the new Yogi Berra stamp. And they're going to issue it live.
That's Yogi Berra or Yogi Bear? Yogi Berra, the baseball player.
Yogi Berra, like the guy who played for the Yankees, buddy.
Like the guy where they came up with the name for the character.
Yeah, I was going to say.
It's so crowded. You know what's going to happen with the stamp, with the release thing? It's so crowded, nobody will go there anymore.
Well, I'm going to tell you what. I am flying in. I want to be there. I remember watching Yogi play on television and everywhere else as a kid. I mean, he was that group of Yankees in the late 40s and early 50s were my team. And the tragedy was that is there was originally hope to honor three other players at the same time along with Yogi, but he was the only one that cleared rights. Mm. All the others had litigation issues and rights issues and, you know, today a lot of people that should have stamps will not get stamps because of the fact that between the squabbles of the estates and other things, there's a problem.
Oh, well, I look at it as a loss for the fans. I look at it as a loss for the Postal Service. But, you know, it also for the celebrities, I don't know, I guess.
Well, the thing about it is when I came on the committee before all this stuff, they did a series of four stamps, and I can't remember. Mickey Mantle was one, but there were was Willie Stargell another one, but there were four different teams. And what they did is they released them as a group of four, but then they did individual paints for the cities in which the stars appear. And I'm pleased to say the Yankee stamps outsold everybody. What can I tell you?
Who hiss?
I know. But Yogi, I mean, there was a car. I'm a big fan of the Sunday paper cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a wonderful cartoon tribute to Yogi Berra this past week. And I forget which of the cartoon strips it was. It just had, you know, it's deja vu all over again. It's not over till it's over. You know, it just took a bunch of Yogi-isms, whatever term you want to use for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm anxious to see his museum, so I'm going to fly in for that one. I'm excited.
Do they have a stamp with a bottle of Yoo-Hoo on it?
No, I don't know.
There are probably people that, A, don't know what Yoo-Hoo is, despite the fact they still sell it in the convenience stores here, and, B, they don't remember when Yogi was pitching the stuff.
Oh, well, you know, what I'm hoping I'm going to see in the museum is a pair of hands, you know, hand cast models with a ring on each of the 10 fingers. He's the only player that has 10 World Series rings.
I wouldn't have known that. There's a future stumper for one of our other radio hosts.
No. You know, well, first of all, I mean, I give Tom Brady a lot of credit. He's got seven of them, right?
Yeah.
And I think he's the next.
But Yogi's the only one that has 10?
Yogi is the only one that has 10. He got eight of them playing. He got one for managing was it the Mets, right?
Maybe. Because I know later Yogi, he was involved with the Mets, but...
Yes, Yogi...
I knew him more
as
a...
That was the Miracle Mets, I think.
No, that was Gil Hodges.
Oh, Gil Hodges, okay.
Now, maybe that was the one in the 70s when they won, but I don't know. I remember the longer it goes on, the more it becomes hazy to me. I remember almost everything about 69, but after that it starts to diminish.
Well, the thing about it is I don't mind Tom Brady getting another world, you know, NFL series ring. But if he gets a ninth one, I'm going to get nervous.
Well, we're talking with Harry Rinker here. I wanted to go back to something you said earlier, but we have to take a break for news. If you have any antiques or collectibles you want to ask about, because this is the thing gets me, I'll have somebody either, if they email me, I can forward it to Harry, but they'll ask me when they're talking about something else, and I'll say, well, Harry will be on with us such and such a date, so call in. And of course, that doesn't mean that people are going to remember because, hey, you got real life going on. 946-0435-814 area code. We have with us today Harry Rinker, as in what you got, and we were talking about Yogi Berra and the number of championship rings he had, and what is it you looked up during the break?
Well, first of all, he did win 10 championship rings as a player between 1947 and 1962. Yankees won 10 World Series during that period, but he won 3 as a manager. He was a coach with the 69 Mets, and he was, I think, a coach with the Yankees or manager of the Yankees in 77 and 78 when they won.
Depends if it was the year that Steinbrenner fired Billy Martin, which was every other year.
Well, and the other thing was he was also a coach for the Houston Astros, who apparently he didn't know anything about trash cans, or he would have won one there too.
Some will get it, some won't, but it's still funny.
It's
still funny to me anyway.
Not too happy about that. But yeah. By the way, here's a statistic that just overwhelmed me. Do you know he was not elected to the Hall of Fame on the first time he was eligible?
Because some people are dumb.
I know. I can't believe he didn't get in until the second. He was on the second time he was on the ballot.
Yeah.
72. And then he only got 85.61% of the votes. What is wrong with these people?
I don't know.
I mean, I don't know who he was competing with, and there were a lot of great stars from that era, and so, you know, who's to say?
But there was a lot that will never get in.
Even so. Yeah. Well, you know, we were talking earlier about speculation.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball cards have made a big comeback.
Okay. Before you do, I'll tell you, based on something you mentioned in the last segment, I will tell you my baseball card story. I had all these guys, I didn't bother to collect baseball cards. They collected me because I would buy them to put in the spokes of my bike, and then I started getting New York Mets baseball cards. So I started collecting a whole bunch of them, and I had some that were not too bad or not too pricey. So I go to, I'm back in my hometown, and I bring the shoebox full of baseball cards into this local baseball card shop. The guy says, I'll give you 200 cash right now. I says, you know what? They'll just go up in value. I'll hold them. Thank you very much. Go back about 5-6 years later. Now there's a baseball strike. He says, nobody cares about these guys. You know why? Because about 150 guys like you came in with the cards, and I bought those for a lot more. I won't give you a dime for what you have now. And besides, everybody wants Shaquille O'Neal cards from basketball. They don't care about baseball anymore. So timing helps.
Yes, it does. It would be better if they would have all wanted Michael Jordan cards, which are doing much better than Shaquille O'Neal cards are at the moment. But I remember, you know, we for those of us who track the antiques and collectible market, we watch these speculative crazes, especially for new stuff. And, you know, I have this rule, Rinker's 30-year rule. For the first 30 years of anything's life, all its value is speculative. And I do that to try to tell people that you buy something that's a year or two or three or four or 5 years old, and you think you're going to spend X amount for it, and you're going to be able to sell it in 10 years or 5 years or 3 years for X amount more, you know, my attitude is always in the minute somebody offers you more to buy it than there. But the one that was interesting and caused me to do some research work recently was there was an enormous speculation in the Jose Canseco card, his rookie card, when he first broke into baseball and was doing very, very well. Now, today you can buy the card for less than $10. I mean, $15. It might take $15 to buy his rookie card. But, you know, I always thought the guy was a fly-by-night player until I looked him up recently, and he had quite a career, actually. Mm. Over 10 years in professional baseball.
But then if you're going to do something like that, look at somebody like Vida Blue, who came on like a house of fire, and then nobody cared after a certain amount of time because the guy didn't do anything.
Look at Steven Strasburg right now with the Nationals. He's on the injured reserve again. I mean, you look back.
This was the guy that was supposed to be the next big thing in baseball, right? Because he even played on one of the farm teams here. He played against the Altoona Curve, and everybody wanted to go to that game. Everybody and their brother wanted something to do with seeing this guy.
Well, the thing about it is that, you know, they bring these people up, and today they blow their arms out, you know, so early. Robin Roberts, who was, I was a Phillies fan until 1950 when they lost four straight to the Yankees and then in the World Series, and that was the end of that. But I was always a big Richie Aspirin and Robin Roberts fan. You know, Robin Roberts pitched 30 and 40 full games in the course of a season. I mean, you know, most pitchers don't get past the fifth inning anymore.
Right. Well, it's like we have to have a designated hitter. We have to take the pitcher out at a certain point, too.
Yeah, I know. It's an interesting time. But, I mean, I've been watching them go down. You know, last year in the shortened season, there was a lot of garbage about, you know, the fact that they didn't have proper training and they weren't ready to go. But this year they had full spring training and they were ready to go. And they're still dropping like flies on the injured reserve.
Yes.
So I don't know. It's hard for me to watch this baseball stuff because you look back and you get some of the memorabilia related to guys that played in the 20s and 30s, and they're in the Hall of Fame, and it doesn't bring much money. Why? Because nobody knows who they are anymore. I mean, seriously. You know, I went on this cruise, and there was this star baseball player, whoever he was, but his baseball card was only worth 50 cents, so he wasn't that much of a star, but he got a lot of free cruises out of it.
But he was willing to do the deal and
well, he was a nice personable guy, and you'd sit there and talk to him about baseball. I mean, it was great talking to him. It was worth every penny as far as I was concerned to have him on the cruise. But no, life is fleeting. I'm doing genealogy of my ancestors. I'm really big into it right now, and I'm probably big into it for another couple years. But, you know, you go in the graveyards, and there's your tombs of your great-great-great-grandfather, and you figure, I'm the only guy that's visited this place in the last 50 years.
Right.
And you realize that time forgets people faster than it remembers them, you know?
But I'll give you an inverse on that. In popular culture now, because we have a way to preserve it, even if it's an old movie from the 40s, it may not be as popular, but not every movie is Casablanca, The Maltese Falcon, or Citizen Kane, or It's a Wonderful Life. Now, It's a Wonderful Life wasn't even that big a deal until it got all the free airings because they let the copyright lapse. But you look at the stuff that we have now. We're playing on some of our stations. We're playing records from 40 and 50 years ago in classic-type formats, whether it's country, whether it's classic favorites or something like that, or classic rock. There were people in 1960, they were not listening to the hits of 1920.
I'm not sure about that.
But, you know, a lot of them may know of them, but no popular stations were playing them then because, I mean, come on, recording methods changed, the taste changed. If you were going to rotate records like Water that were 40 years old on a station in 1965, you probably weren't going to be very successful.
Well, here's the deal. You know, I remember when Frank Sinatra records were collected, old Blue Eyes. And, you know, you go up and look at the value of Frank Sinatra records now, and, you know, there's still some, but very little. But then you look at guys like Perry Como and those guys. Eddie Cantor, I mean, we used to have, there was a point when we were considering putting a totally separate, you know, chapter in our price guide for Eddie Cantor collectibles. And I said, no, I don't think this guy's going to be around and, you know, in another 10 years that we need to care about it.
There's got to be people listening right now. Who the heck was Eddie Cantor?
And
if we'd had this conversation 20 years ago, everybody would know, even younger people.
Well, that led to, you know, I told you we have all these rules in Rinker's rule. And one of Rinker's other rules, what is something worth when the next generation doesn't know who the person is? Because what good is it? What good is its value? And that led to what we call the Tom Mix rule. Because, you know, when I first came into recording things in the price guide in the 1980s, right, Tom Mix cowboy collectibles were big, big, big business. Mm-hmm. You couldn't give it away today.
Yeah. Well, my mother loved Hopalong Cassidy. Nobody would care now.
Yeah, well, we know all about Hoppy, man. I loved Hoppy, too. He was my favorite cowboy hero.
You know, it's interesting. I've seen people talk about there was a Hopalong Cassidy radio For those that don't know, yes, I have some.
Oh, radio.
I don't have that one. But, I mean, no, there was an actual radio.
Radio.
Yeah, just
yes.
Like there was a...
comes in two color cases, a red one and a black one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there was a Charlie McCarthy radio. And people are going, who the heck was Charlie McCarthy? Well, again, I mean, it's a double collectible for people who would buy radios or people would buy that memorabilia for that particular artist.
Well, when I wrote my book about Hopalong Cassidy collectibles, you know, I wrote a book about Hoppy. I wanted to call it "The Good Guy Wore Black."
Hmm.
But the problem was that Bill Boyd didn't wear black; he wore dark blue. So,
but he was in black and white movies.
But it was in black and white movies that looked black.
Yeah.
And then it would always bother me that Lash LaRue.
Yeah, I was going to say black. Lash LaRue. People would think that's who you meant, and this is pre Johnny Cash
and Zorro and all the rest of these guys. So then my second alternate title was "He Never Kissed a Woman," okay?
Did he kiss his horse?
No. In one movie, the villainess, who was in love with Hoppy, was dying. And as her dying wish, she asked Hoppy to kiss her, and he relented and did it. So there went that one. Then I was going to entitle it "He Never Sang a Note." Well, fortunately for... I guess music lovers worldwide, Bill Boyd never did sing a note as Hopalong Cassidy, so that would have worked. But then we wound up calling him King of the Cowboy Merchandisers, because in 1948, he was almost broke. He took all his money, remortgaged his house, and bought the rights to the black and white movies for television.
Uh-huh.
And within 4 years, he was a multimillionaire.
At least he saw what a lot of people in his generation didn't.
But there were a lot of people that licensed product earlier. You mentioned Babe Ruth and Yogi Berra. There were a lot of people that licensed their name to products. But Bill Boyd made it a science. Before Gene Autry, before Roy Rogers, Bill Boyd started licensing his products for his radio show. He licensed over 2,500 different objects, from milk to bread to radios to watches.
And it's funny because people will say George Lucas started it. No, he didn't.
Oh, listen, the thing about Star Wars licensing was that it didn't come out right when the movie released because nobody had any faith in the movie. It was a year after the movie came out that they finally got the licensed product on the market. Not after the first one, then of course later movies they got it out in advance.
And famously, the advantage was, since nobody thought this was going anywhere, one of the negotiating things they threw him a bone was, oh yeah, okay, you want to keep the merchandising rights? Sure, nobody's going to see this movie. You can have the merchandising to all Star Wars in perpetuity. Yeah, that wasn't a bright idea on the studio's part, but you know what? I like it.
Well, Lucas made a lot of money from licensing, and a lot of his licensees didn't make their money back. But, you know, that's another story. But anyway, going back to Hoppy, he was so dominant a licensor that he could go to a lunchbox company. You know, there were Hoppy lunchboxes.
Mm-hmm.
And say, okay, you want my license. You can't do a lunchbox of another TV movie star or a cowboy star, movie star.
Wow.
And so he went with the Aladdin Lunch Company, signed him up. And because of that, King Sealy lunchboxes got Roy Rogers and all the other, and Gene Autry and all the other guys, and made a fortune, and he made that company too.
Interesting. But we have to take a break here because we'll have a short segment when we get back, but we never got to the articles I was going to talk to him about because Harry still writes articles on his website, which I'll post a couple and you can peruse those at your leisure later today. But you got a few seconds if you want to call in and ask about anything on the 11th hour.
The opinions you hear on WRTA are the hosts, callers, and guests, and are not necessarily those of the station.
How do you protect yourself from the new forms of the coronavirus? Here you go. Got a mask that fits good and snug? Perfect. Now, give your neighbors at least 6 feet of space and avoid crowds, because all that stuff still works too. Look, I'll definitely get my vaccine when it's my turn, but now isn't the time to let your guard or your mask down.
We can do this. Learn more at cdc.gov/coronavirus. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
It If you haven't seen Mitsubishi lately, then you haven't seen Mitsubishi. Introducing the stunningly innovative new 2022 Eclipse Cross. With a sleek exterior and smart interior, the Eclipse Cross has a bold and sporty look with the roominess and utility of an SUV. All powered by Mitsubishi's exclusive Super All-Wheel Control System. Take one out at 5-star Mitsubishi Altoona. No one stocks more, no one sells for less. It's high style without the high price. Don't run with the pack. Set your own course, because you know where you're going. Now get there in the new 2022 Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross. Backed by an extensive 10-year powertrain limited warranty. Get style, get safety, get performance, and get the lowest price at 5-star Mitsubishi Altoona.
5-star Mitsubishi Altoona. It doesn't get better than this.
Super all-wheel control is an available feature on all trim levels. See dealer for all price and warranty terms and conditions.
Leitner Communications is proud to back the blue. We are showing our support for our local law enforcement by giving them a voice to talk about news, initiatives, statistics, and any messages they want to get out there. Back the Blue is sponsored by Allegheny Trade Company, Brent Cogan Electrical, Ron Beatty Carpet and Upholstery Cleaning, Sorge Funeral Home and Crematory, Double Tap Indoor Gun Range and Training Center, the law offices of Goldstein, Heslop, Steele, Clapper, Oswald, and Smith. Special thanks to the award man, Greenwood Altoona.
It's the 11th hour. Doug Herendeen, Harry Rinker is in What You Got. And I wanted to read something from one of Harry's articles. I'll post it, but we'll get to it sometime in the future to go through more of the sports world's approach to Gen Z and how related to collecting. The sports community understands that it has to make youngsters a fan by the time they're 18 or they will lose them forever. And why would they come back at 35 when they never been there in the first place? Exactly. I mean, the average 35-year-old is not going to get into a new sport. Maybe there was a time when a lot of people didn't know NASCAR and they got into that, but its time is as the hot sport has also passed. And when they started doing games, it would start, let's have 15 different ceremonies so we can have the game start like 8:45 on a school night. When you're doing either a football game or you're doing the World Series, you're not making new fans of the kids because they're not going to stay up. And if they try, their parents aren't going to let them. Sure, they're not going to hide their little phone under the bed like I used to with my transistor radio to listen to stuff because they're not going to care. And a lot of that has happened with collectibles.
But we did that as kids.
We did that as kids, but so what? Now there are so many ways you can get something online or whatever. You don't have to physically possess it. Fine and dandy, but I don't know too many people that are 17 or 18 that are collecting things, anything.
No, they're not. And this is the big problem. The collecting trade never understood, which in a way the sports trade did, although there's a lot of questions raised about what impact they've had. But, you know, if we don't turn the young people on, young being 14, 15, 16, 17, 18-year-olds, they just look at all that stuff and say, who wants that old junk? You know, we want new. The curse word of the antiques and collectibles game is new. You know, the generation that grew up and said, we want our kids to have all new stuff. We inherited the old stuff. We had to have hand-me-downs. And if we're going to treat our kids right, they want new stuff. Well, new today means something that lasts for a year and a half. Mm-hmm. I was just listening to a news broadcast today about Apple. A number of states are passing independent repair laws where independent people can repair things. And who's fighting it? Apple.
Sure, because they want to keep it.
Companies. No, what they want to do is be able to have their stuff break down in 2 years and force everybody to buy a new one.
Or you have people that are selling farm implements that have the problem where the people that are buying them, they got the same thing. It's like you can't repair them. You have to go through the company. And if you want a new module, it's $2,000 for this or $2,000 for that. And it's like, no, I want to be able to fix what I have in my field. I bought it. Oh, you only think you bought it. We're going to own it the rest of its life.
But you know, in the old days, when you went to a farm auction, one of the key components was the tools.
Mm-hmm.
At the farm, because all those farmers repaired their old tractors.
Sure.
Repaired their equipment, kept it running for years. And you're right, I should have mentioned farm equipment, because in the story that was on the news this morning, that was also cited. A number of states have specifically passed independent repair laws to allow people to be able to repair farm equipment, because you know, people invest all this money; they want to be able to fix it.
I mean, it's insanity. The manufacturers think they're going to get to keep this forever. That they're not going to let anybody. Oh, you can't fix that. You have to bring it back to us, and then you have to pay us a lot of money to get it working again. It's ridiculous.
Listen, you're talking about fixing it. You know, the old hi-fi units, they're just one example. Record players are another one. Radios are a great example. Finding someone today that can repair a 1920s, 30s radio is not an easy skill. The same is true with watches.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, Bowman, which was the famous watch repair school in Lancaster, closed decades ago. They don't train anybody to fix them anymore. You know, these new electronic ones, you pay several hundred thousand dollars for them, but they don't work, you throw them out, you buy another one. I mean,
A disposable society does not lend itself to collecting.
Well, we're disposable, and you're going to dispose of me in just a few minutes.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. If people want to get in touch with you, what's the email address?
All right, Harry Elrinker, HarryElrinker, HarryElrinker@AOL.com. And I will plead with our WRTA listeners and those of us listening to us, please send me some questions with pictures because I'm running out of things for my column. And I mean, you think I have to end my column because nobody cares about what anything is worth anymore. So there we go.
Yeah. Well, to put a too fine a point on it. Harry, you'll be with us again next month, and maybe we'll have a guest then. Harry Rinker, thanks very much.
Hey, take care, sir, and thank you. Have a great month ahead.